Welcome back, Deep Divers. Ready for another fascinating journey into the ancient world? Today, we're diving into the Sinai Covenant, and we're going to be using some excerpts you sent us from this book, The Ratification of the Sinai Covenant.
A great choice.
It is. It's a story that I think, you know, a lot of people are familiar with, but there are some really unexpected layers there.
Oh, absolutely. And especially when we think about it, you know, kind of within the whole world of covenants in the ancient world.
Yeah, because a covenant, I mean, that's not a word we use every day. So we should probably, just so everyone's on the same page, we should probably start with what exactly do we even mean by covenant in this context?
Yeah. In the ancient Near East, a covenant was like way more than just an agreement. You know, it was a really serious pact, often between like a king and his people.
Oh, okay.
Like full of symbolism, rituals. I mean, breaking a covenant, that was a big deal, big consequences.
So not just like shaking hands on it and calling it a day.
No. Much more serious.
Wow. Okay, so the stakes are high. And then the Sinai Covenant, this pact between God and the Israelites.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the ultimate covenant, right?
You could definitely say that. It's really like the foundation of, you know, Judeo-Christian tradition, so.
Yeah, so much is built on this. And like understanding this, you know, kind of unlocks so many other things.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it.
All right, so let's get into it. Now, our source really sets the scene, and it's a pretty dramatic one, Mount Sinai.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not just any mountain,
right?
Like, this is kind of a big deal, this mountain.
Yeah. It's described as like a cosmic mountain. It's a place where like heaven and earth meet, you know?
Yeah.
You got to picture it like a towering peak shrouded in mystery, power. God chose Mount Sinai for a reason. It was believed to be divided into these three zones. So you have the summit, the midway point, and the base, each with its own role to play in what was about to happen.
Okay, so the stage is set.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to admit, this idea of encountering a holy God on a mountaintop,
yeah.
I don't know, that sounds a little intimidating to me, a little dangerous maybe.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you're right on the money. The Israelites were still, like, very much human, prone to, you know, mistakes, messing
yeah.
up. And the text really highlights the dangers they faced approaching a holy God.
Yeah.
Like, they needed all this, like, these elaborate preparations and rituals to kind of bridge the gap. Yeah.
So they don't, like, get zapped.
Yeah, exactly. To ensure their safety in this encounter.
Okay, very important preparations then. All right, so let's get into, like, the heart of the matter. The laws of the covenant. I mean, I was really struck by the sheer, like, breadth of topics covered in our source.
I know, it's pretty amazing.
Like worship, ethics, social structures. We're even talking about, like, farming practices. It's all in there.
It's pretty remarkable, isn't it? The goal was to, like, establish this holy nation, like a people. Set apart, guided by, like, you know, divine principles.
Right, right.
The laws weren't just random or anything. Like, they had a purpose, you know, to shape every aspect of life.
Yeah, reflecting God's, you know, kind of character and purpose.
Exactly.
But this wasn't just some king, like, decreeing laws on a whim.
No.
There's this real clear sense that these are coming straight from God.
Absolutely. Big, big difference there. You know, this source really emphasizes that. These aren't human constructs.
Yeah.
They're divine pronouncements.
Yeah.
It sets them apart from all the other, you know, laws of other nations. Mm-hmm. This isn't about human power. It's about, like, aligning yourself with this, you know, higher divine order.
Okay. So much bigger than just, you know, human laws.
Right. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the ratification ceremony itself. I mean, our source paints such a vivid picture. We've got an altar built at the foot of the mountain, 12 standing stones for the 12 tribes of Israel, sacrifices Moses is reading aloud from the Book of the Covenant.
That's quite a scene.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, talk about a ceremony designed to make an impression, right?
Every detail was, like, so carefully chosen, so symbolic, like, designed to convey how serious and important this pact was. But out of all those elements, there's one ritual that really kind of stands out, and that's the blood ritual.
Oh, yeah. That's the one that, like, really sticks with you. We got to unpack that one. What's going on there?
It's not just about, you know, being shocking or anything. The sprinkling of the blood on the altar, on the book, on the people.
Right.
It's a powerful act.
Yeah.
It was all about symbolizing their union with God, the creation of, like, this one family through this shared experience. And, you know, blood represents life itself, so it becomes the seal of their commitment, a tangible sign of that covenant bond.
Wow. It's probably interesting how much meaning and power, you know, is attached to those kinds of rituals.
Yeah.
And you know, it's really interesting. This blood ritual actually foreshadows something incredibly important in Christianity.
It does.
the Eucharist.
Fascinating connection, and our source does a great job highlighting that.
It does. It brings in all these quotes from the Gospels, like when Jesus says during the Last Supper, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood poured out for you."
Yeah.
Like that imagery for anyone familiar with the Sinai story.
Totally. And even more striking, you know, in John's Gospel, there's this detail where they offer Jesus a sponge soaked in wine on a hyssop stick.
Oh, wow.
Hyssop being the same herb used to sprinkle blood during the Sinai covenant. It's almost like John is like intentionally drawing that parallel between Jesus' sacrifice and that ancient ritual, kind of like fulfilling it, transforming it in a new way.
It's like a secret code almost.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, like, were people at the time really picking up on those connections, or is that something we see more clearly looking back?
Yeah, that's something scholars debate. But I mean, the fact is that those echoes are there.
You're there, right.
Woven into the New Testament.
So the Eucharist, this central ritual of Christianity, it becomes almost like a new covenant renewal ceremony.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. But it doesn't stop there, because our source goes on to describe this other scene, this captivating scene. Moses, Aaron, his sons, and 70 elders, they're all invited to dine with God midway up the mountain. We're talking about sapphire pavement underfoot. It's a glimpse into the heavenly court. It's like, it's surreal.
It's like, it's both awe-inspiring, but also, like, strangely intimate.
Yeah.
Like, what's the significance of that event, that glimpse into, you know, the divine realm?
I know. It's wild. The imagery is breathtaking. And it really connects to, like, the descriptions of the divine realm that we find in Isaiah, in Ezekiel, even in Revelation.
Oh, wow.
Our source suggests that this event, this shared meal, prefigures the Eucharistic banquet where believers, you know, cleansed by Christ's sacrifice, are symbolically joining the heavenly feast. Like, it's a foretaste of that eternal communion promised in the new covenant.
Okay. My mind is officially blown. This whole thing with covenant formation, I mean, it seems to be like a recurring theme throughout the Bible. It's not just this one-time event at Sinai.
You got it. You see these elements of covenant making, like the sacrifices, the oaths, the shared meals popping up all over the place. You have Abraham's covenant with God, Isaac's treaty with Abimelech, even King Saul's affirmation as ruler. They all have those echoes of these ancient practices.
So these weren't just like isolated events. It was this pattern, this recurring pattern, really highlighting how important these actions were in like solidifying relationships.
Exactly. It wasn't just about the ritual, but about the meaning behind it. They were these symbols of commitment, relationship, both with God and with each other. They carried weight. They had consequences. They were the building blocks of trust in a world where your word was your bond.
It's amazing how, like, something that happened so long ago can still feel so relevant today.
I know, right? It's really incredible. And what's even more fascinating is that all those covenant elements we've been talking about, the sacrifices, the oaths, shared meals, they weren't just an Israelite thing.
Wait, really? You're telling me other cultures in the ancient world were doing similar things?
Oh, absolutely. Our source mentioned these Hittite treaty texts, and they give us this like glimpse into this whole world of covenant practices across the ancient Near East. Rulers making covenants with their subjects, kings making alliances with each other. And those agreements, they were often sealed with rituals that would look super familiar to anyone who's read the Bible.
So are we talking like blood rituals, shared meals, like the whole nine yards?
Exactly. They had their own ways of, you know, invoking the divine, making oaths binding, solidifying relationships. Covenant making seems like it was like the common language of diplomacy back then. It was a way to establish trust, build those lasting bonds across different cultures and kingdoms.
That's so interesting. It makes you wonder, like, did the Israelites kind of adapt to these existing practices, or were those elements always a part of their own traditions?
That's the million-dollar question. Scholars have been debating that for centuries, you know? It's like a chicken and egg situation. No easy answer. Most likely it was a bit of both, right? Drawing on those ancient traditions while also adapting and reinterpreting them to fit their own understanding of God and their place in the world.
It really shows you just how complex and layered history can be. But even with all these like cultural influences, the Israelites definitely brought something unique to the table with this whole covenant idea, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. The idea that their God was personally involved, that he initiated this covenant, laid down specific laws as part of the deal, that's what really set the Sinai covenant apart. This wasn't just some pragmatic agreement between two parties. It was a divinely ordained relationship, and it had implications for every single part of their lives.
And it wasn't just a one-time thing either. It's not like they just signed on the dotted line and moved on. This was a way of life, right?
Exactly. The Sinai covenant wasn't just about that one ceremony on Mount Sinai. It was about living out its terms every single day, year after year. It became the foundation of who they were as a people, their whole identity.
You know, earlier we were talking about the dangers for the Israelites in encountering a holy God, and I'm actually really curious about that. Like, what was it about approaching the divine that was considered so risky back then?
That's a really good question. In the ancient world, the divine was seen as incredibly powerful, like even dangerous, you know. It wasn't something you approached casually or without the right preparation. And for the Israelites, who believed their God was uniquely holy and righteous, that awareness of the difference between humanity and the divine was even more intense.
So those rituals and preparations weren't just for show. They were like for real.
Oh, totally. They were all about purifying, consecrating, bridging that gap between humanity and God in a way that kept everyone safe. You see this throughout the Old Testament, this emphasis on cleanliness, ritual purity, approaching God with reverence and awe. It shows this deep respect for the power of the divine and also an acknowledgement of human limitations.
It's interesting how that idea of approaching the divine with caution and preparation, it shows up in other religions, too.
It does. It really makes you think about that universal human desire to connect with something greater than ourselves, but also that understanding of our own flaws and the need for humility.
I can just imagine the Israelites at the foot of Mount Sinai. You know, they hear the voice of God. They see fire and smoke. I mean, it must have been, like, completely overwhelming, terrifying and awe-inspiring all at the same time.
It's hard to even wrap your mind around it. Imagine being there, feeling the earth shake, seeing all that power on display. The source really paints a picture of that moment, the sensory experience, the emotions. It was definitely an event designed to stick with them, a story passed down for generations.
And for those generations that came after, it really did become a part of who they were. It shaped their identity, their beliefs, their relationship with God.
You got it. It was their origin story, the core of their faith. It told them they were a people chosen by God, connected to him through this sacred covenant.
You know, it's so easy to think about all this as, like, just ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crazy how much the Sinai covenant still impacts us today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from the Ten Commandments, which people are still talking about today, to the way we use that language of covenant in our own vows and promises, the story of Sinai is still shaping our world.
And then, of course, there's the Eucharist, which we talked about earlier, that central ritual in Christianity that has these direct links back to Sinai.
Right. And it's not just about the symbols, that fundamental idea of a covenant relationship, God binding himself to humanity and inviting us into that relationship. It's the very heart of the Christian understanding of salvation.
I think we often think about covenants in these, like, really legalistic terms, almost like contracts.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But there's this whole other dimension to it, right? Mm. It's about loyalty, commitment, trust, all those things that are so important in any relationship.
You're so right. It's not just about rules. It's about a relationship built on love, respect, commitment. And just like any relationship, it takes work, communication, forgiveness, you know, all those messy things that make us human.
Which makes you think about the challenges the Israelites must have faced in actually living out the terms of this covenant. I mean, it couldn't have been easy, right?
Yeah.
Navigating all those laws and trying to stay true to what they promised.
Oh, no, definitely not. And you see that struggle throughout the Old Testament. They messed up, they rebelled, and they faced the consequences. But even when they failed, you see this theme of God's faithfulness, his willingness to forgive, to offer second chances, to renew that covenant relationship.
There's a lot of hope in that message, isn't there?
Definitely.
Even when we mess up, when we break our promises, there's a way back. It's never too late to turn things around.
It's such a powerful message. And I think that's one of the things that makes the Sinai covenant so timeless, that idea that a relationship can survive the tough times, that it can be restored and renewed even after it's been broken. It's something we can all relate to, right? Our capacity for love and for making mistakes and the possibility of finding redemption.
I love that. It's like this ancient story is giving us this blueprint for how to build and maintain relationships, not just with the divine, but with each other, too.
That's a great way to put it. The Sinai Covenant, even though it's rooted in a specific time and place, it speaks to some really universal truths about being human, our need for connection, the power of commitment and forgiveness. And it's not just about like our personal relationships either. You know, the Sinai Covenant, it also has a lot to say about how we function as a society. Mm-hmm. Remember all those laws about social justice, about taking care of the poor, the vulnerable, that's all rooted in this idea of covenant, that we're all connected, responsible for each other.
Yeah. It's amazing how those ancient principles, they're still so relevant to the conversations we're having today about like ethics, social responsibility. It's like they laid the foundation for our modern ideas about social justice.
Oh, for sure. You see echoes of those Sinaitic laws and, you know, movements for equality, calls for compassion, the fight for a just world. Those values, they're part of us now, and you can trace them all the way back to that mountain.
One thing I always find interesting is the role of Moses in all of this. He's like this mediator between God and the people.
Yeah.
Talk about a tough job. He's basically trying to put the divine will into words that everyone can understand.
I know, right? Can you imagine the pressure? Trying to communicate all those laws, explain this whole covenant thing to a whole nation. Our source portrays Moses as this incredible leader, a prophet, but he's also human. He has doubts, fears, and you can feel the weight of that responsibility on him.
It makes him a lot more relatable, though, wouldn't you say? We see him struggle, get frustrated, even angry sometimes. He's not this perfect superhero. He's someone who deals with the same stuff we all do.
Exactly. And that's what makes his story so powerful, I think. He's this example of faith, but also of human weakness. He reminds us that even the people who are called to do great things, they're still on a journey. They're still learning as they go.
Which kind of brings us to this question of obedience. The Israelites, they made this vow to uphold their end of the bargain, to follow God's laws. But looking back at the Old Testament, it wasn't exactly smooth sailing, was it? There were definitely some bumps in the road.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They strayed, they messed up, and they had to deal with the consequences. But even in those moments where they failed, you see this consistent theme of God's faithfulness, his willingness to forgive, to give them another chance, to renew the covenant.
It's a message of hope, you know? Even when we mess up, even when we break our promises, there's a way back. It's never too late to make things right.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the most important things the Sinai Covenant teaches us, that a relationship can survive tough times, that it can be healed and made new even after it's been broken. It's a message that really gets to the heart of what it means to be human, you know, our capacity for both great love and huge mistakes, and that possibility of redemption that's always there.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the Sinai Covenant, what's the one thing you really want our listeners to take away from this?
I think it's that the Sinai Covenant, it's not just some dusty old story from the past. It's alive. It's part of us. It's woven into the fabric of who we are. It's a story about commitment, about responsibility, about this powerful connection between humanity and the divine. But it's also about how we treat each other, how we create a world that's fair and compassionate, about how we deal with our own flaws while trying to live a meaningful life. It's a story that still has a lot to teach us today.
That's beautiful. I love that. And for our listeners who are feeling inspired to like keep exploring this, our source ends with this really thought-provoking question. If covenants are all about creating these binding relationships, what covenants do we make in our own lives? What are the rituals or symbols that give them meaning and make them last?
Yeah, that's a great question to think about. What promises do we make to ourselves, to each other, to something bigger than ourselves? And what do we do? What actions, what rituals, what symbols do we use to really make those promises stick, to make them a real part of our lives?
Lots to ponder there. Food for thought, for sure.
Yeah.
Until next time, deep divers, keep exploring, keep asking those questions, and keep looking for those connections that bring us together and give our lives meaning.